Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through. Chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
On through, where you get to travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. My name is Pam Ray. With me, as always, is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the website or the group to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, tonight is an after midnight show, which means while we do not allow for smut porn or overly graphic violence, we do allow for a bit more adult language and content. If you find this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have up to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everyone's taste. Now, for this show, Rex and I ran a contest on All Poetry with some artwork of Jackson Pollock as prom. And, of course, got some absolutely wonderful rights that I'm looking forward to delving into. And hello, Rex.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
All right.
Very cool. You know, the interesting thing about Jackson Pollock, is first of all how, like so many other people who are creative in mind, he struggled with addiction and depression. But to me, one of my own discoveries that I didn't even realize until after we decided, like after you had suggested him as a topic and a prompt, and I thought, oh, that's a really great idea. And, you know, to be honest, I never realized he did anything other than that splatter artwork, because he became so well known for that. That was such a controversial art form, with some people absolutely loving it and other people just constantly criticizing it, that it became pretty much what he was really well known for. So when I started looking into his artwork, I came to find out, so most of his artwork seems to have an abstract or surrealism type look to it, there were several pieces he did which actually had specific form and shape rather than just, you know, being the splattered. And even the splattered ones, like he had one painting as a prompt called the Eyes in the Heat. And at first it really just looks like if you were just, you know, like it's nothing but the colors splattered around. But then you realize that between the colors are these eyeballs, eyes painted in and peering out. So just wonderful to discover new things like that. So thank you for the suggestion there. Anything you can tell us about Jackson Pollock or anything about his artwork that you find intriguing?
Well, I've seen some of his, they do have some clips of him actually doing some of his work. And I've seen one where he's on a ladder over this, must be a 10-foot long by a 6-foot wide piece of canvas that he's working on.
Oh, yeah.
Just the oddity whether it's taking large splatter drops or running a stirring stick over the bristles with the brush to get that which he wanted.
Yes, yes. I'm glad you actually brought that up because I have seen similar videos, and I'm glad you brought that up because he did have a real physicality to his artwork, and not only the physicality of him, but you also mentioned the manipulation of the bristles of the brush, and so it really wasn't like just closing his eyes and just randomly moving. There was really a certain, like as you were mentioning, a physicality and a purpose to his movements in order to create. Oh, very cool.
Just another odd duck playing with paint and
that's
throwing
right.
Shit against the wall with sticks.
Well, you know what he is? He's the kid in Head Start that grew up and became famous for finger painting. The rest of us just finger painted and never got.
Did you mute yourself again? Pam, you got to take the mute button off so you can talk. Either that or you hung up on yourself. I'm not sure which at this moment. Since you're gone totally, I guess you did. It bounced from the studio.
Okay, I am back. I did not expect my phone to drop me that quickly in the show. It wanted you to have some alone time, Rex.
Yeah, making fun of you for dropping yourself.
Oh, goodness. All right, well, we'll go ahead and get the show started. And we're actually going to start it with a carryover from Going Gonzo. And Weird and Weirder by Colette. By the way, you can hear me now, right? I'm not just talking to myself.
Yes, you are, and I can't.
Smart ass. All right. And we have a SoundCloud for that, so here we go.
Weird and Weirder. Over the dinner table at a restaurant, my geek friend is getting excited over his newly found math theorem, going on and on about getting it patented. Meanwhile, all I can think of is, if all foods could taste as this delicious as this pasta dish a la melanzana, I'd stop eating meat immediately. A bunch of overeducated valley girls sitting at the university cafeteria in Italy discussing about pseudo-intellectual subjects until I arrived holding my cappuccino cup and saucer, hollering, "Attenti, attenti, there's a mean cappuccino foaming at the mouth." I thought it was a good joke, but they just rolled their eyes at me, sighed, and turned back to continue chatting with each other. Now, why do people take themselves so seriously? Why can't they just be, drop the pretense and be themselves, crazy, weird, or just dumb, and allow room for people to be anything less than perfect and beautiful and belong and to be real and not be judged? We are who we are with what we're given by birth. Wacky and weird doesn't mean not having a brain. But those of us born with this brand often find humor in the most dire situations. I can imagine laughing if I were in the place of an opponent of Bashar al-Assad in an overcrowded prison cell being tortured. Then my torturer comes up with his last and final instrument, a contraption to gouge out your eyeball. I'd imagine me guffawing out loud, if I had enough strength to do so, saying something like, "Bravo, you really outdone yourself." Perhaps the last words before my death, but at least I will have the last laugh instead. End the poem.
Wonderful read there, Colab, and thank you for the sound cut. It is very much appreciated. Sorry that I missed it for the show was originally intended for, but I'm glad we got to hear your poetry and your voice on this show. And Rex, your chosen prompt inspired that. So your thoughts.
Both sarcastic and humorous, that first angle kind of hitting on the pretense of something one doesn't understand, but trying to inject themselves as with a little touch of humor, which is looked upon disdainfully as though they're too aloof to actually understand the fact that, hey, yeah, you can tell a joke in a moment. It doesn't mean anything more or less than the joke itself, which obviously gets people judged for. But the second one hits on that sort of humor itself of being the last one to offer up something, even in the darkest situation. Why? Because humor offers up that that moment of relief where the pressure in the moment, depending on what it is open up like a relief valve. And it's just something humorous offers up that note to, hey, you know what? It doesn't matter. I can get through this, maybe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I like that you brought up how, you know, using the humor in the moment and how some people don't get it. But, and you know, the use of sarcasm and the use of humor in this to bring home the point about, you know, not always fitting in, you know, that was an excellent comment. Today I ran into a lady who didn't have a sense of humor. I came home. My dog was outside. So I grabbed her, and the lady stopped her car and said, to inform me that she had called the police on my dog. And then she said, "Aren't there leash laws around here?" To which I responded, "Well, yes, but she doesn't follow them." And, yeah, she did not appreciate that. You know, some people just in those kind of moments don't. I like her attention to the little details, like the differences in the way people think, like the friend going on about mathematics and her thinking about the pasta dish and how she could give up meat if everything without meat was this delicious. And again, something I have to agree with because I especially like the combination of basil and tomato, like a really good basil tomato soup I would pass up meat for. And, you know, just as always, a top-notch read. I like the biting lines of, I can imagine laughing if I were in the place of an opponent of Bashar al-Assad in an overcrowded prison cell being tortured, and my torturer comes up with his last and final instrument. That was such a clever and dark humor way to end this, with the whole idea of you being your last moment laughing until that oh shit moment. So excellent, right, Colab, and very well done. All right. And Let's see what we got next. All right. Oh, that's funny, Jeremy. That was me dressed as a lady calling the police on you again. Oh, too funny. All right. And up next we have Eric Beauty and the Beast by Eric Swenson. And we have a sound card for that one. And we also have, I believe, Dexter joining us. Welcome, Dexter. Glad you could join us.
Welcome. Glad I could be here.
Heck.
Hello.
Awesome.
Wanted to give a call. So continue. Glad I could be here.
All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and play Eric's SoundCloud. So here we go.
Beauty and the Beast. Adversity. Travesty. Tapestry. Dribbled in paint. Creative angst. Attacks. Blank canvases. Back actor tractor tears of earth. Terse reverse of blunted brush teeth. Excavation till mind blurs. Blue exhaust fumes. No pain, no gain. Convergence of multicolored waste. Plastic refuses to decompose. Like heated reds, cool blues, mishmash black streaks peak. Incubus of creative anarchy simmers. Microscopic life slammed in your face. Enlargement of emotional miasma. Mind grapples, wrestles reason. Feel acidic unscreen rigor mortis release. Raggedy rainbow cobweb zigzag. Torrid beauty tangos the beast. Paddy wax smacking your face. Life ain't always bluebells and buttercups, chum. Lambast or love. Pollock screwed autistic convention. Bareback rough rider artist. No armistice with inner demons. Alcohol spun, his wonky worn top totally off kilter. Enormity of passion conquered dull dormitories. Gigantic mind battled emptiness. No petite manicure with watercolors. Saber slashes. Strike the surface. Pointed paintbrush, machine gun fires color. No time for feeble, petite mort whimpers. Tired back actor, tractor, artist tore up earth. Terse reverse of soul, serrated brush teeth. Inner demons excavated to mind blue, red exhaust fumes. Vassal virgins still wait in vain. Cyclops-scented passion raged against the dark. Convergence of a life that still streams creative angst through pain. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Eric. Thank you for the sound cloud. It's very much appreciated. Friendly reminder, everyone, if you can't call in, but you can make a recording of your poem, then that is the next best thing, because then we get the opportunity to hear your poetry in your voice. Okay, Dexter, you're the new kid on the block, which means I'm throwing you headfirst into this poem. Go for it.
This was an incredible write, just about the chaos, and, you know, the beauty and the beast, the chaos of the painting itself. He really captured it here in just a masterful, very skillfully, very skillful way. Something I found interesting is that he does terse reverse of blunted brush teeth, and then he finishes with terse reverse of serrated brush teeth. I just found the tie back from the beginning to the end very interesting, and I can't quite bite off quite what a good way to really phrase that or to sum that up. But one thing that really did stand out to me also here was the gigantic mind battled emptiness. That line really stood out to me because I feel like that captures a lot of his paintings because, you know, it's a very smart guy, but he struggled with to make the statement that he struggled with emptiness because he just filled these canvases with color and didn't matter what the color was or it didn't matter how it blended together or anything. He just struggled with that emptiness inside of his mind, and to say that was transferred over into the painting. You know, I just thought that this was a very strong write and very well done.
Oh, absolutely. And I really liked that comment on the couple parts you brought up. Like, I felt like the connecting between those two parts kind of looped around and almost like represented the way his painting style often created loops. And I like that you brought up that emptiness part and how he was always trying to fill his canvases, and the idea, you know, that he struggled with alcoholism and depression. I also feel like a lot of the language used in this represented movement. So excellent comment and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's the process from start to finish. Look at that first, the second line. Creative angst and attacks blank canvases. The back act attracted tears up earth. First reverse off blunted brush teeth. Excavation from mind blows blue. Exhaust fumes. No pain, no gain. There's a thought there of tearing up the ease of what should be as opposed to what is. Then he hits on multicolored waves, heated reds, cool blues, the mishmash, black streaks, teak, and the incubus of creative anarchy simmers. That's that first note of his first attack on the canvas. Then again, the microscopic light slammed in your face. You do get that imagery of that being something that might crawl beneath the skin, so to speak. Acidic angst, green rigor mortis release. There's a kind of rigidity in that. The rainbow, raggedy rainbow cobweb zigzag, far beauty tango is the beast. There is little tidbits of color and beauty that strikes at the heart of that which is mostly black and kind of a taupe undercoating beneath. And that, I got to go with that last stanza again, too, because it rolls back to the first one, but it ends up as being that which for the process has climaxed itself, because he does take a couple lines and tear them up again. That Beck said that first reverse of source rated brush teeth as opposed to the, what was it, first reverse off blunted brush teeth. So, I already started out with the blunted brush and then finished off with a brush which had some serrated teeth to it, giving you a different perspective in the brush as he finishes out the piece. And then again, it was blue exhaust flames up top. Now the mind blue red exhaust flames. There's that noted finished the exhaustion that comes on the bottom end of it. The cyclops-centered passion rage. It's the singularity, tunnel vision until that which you wanted is finally brought to bear. And that comes in that last line, convergence of life that screams creative angst through paint. Eric did a great job with this and was as playful as the painting itself.
I like that. I like that you bring up that it's all about, like, it's about the creation process and the movements that create it and the manipulation. And you know, it just really, and well, I really like how you mentioned that near the end as it comes to the idea of being completely spent, of using one's energy so much in the creation process that you just almost like, it's almost like they need that moment of rest. So excellent comment there, Rex. All right. Let's see what we got next. All right. Up next is Eyes in the Heat by Time Teller. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Eyes in the Heat by Time Teller. The swelter of pollen, like ash, drops upon the summer months, making journeys a slash and hatchet thrusts of energy. So we'll take this world that we can never see, those eyes from within, the heat of pollen, as friction smokes the paranoia deliberately. And each step forward is a mistrust, tangles of air currents wrap their limbs around, scratching skin and poking beneath in a vain hope to harden muscle into calluses, wet fingers. Yet, blurred, blinding light shimmering through scorched pollen indicates things differently, point and shape, steadfastly behind the waves of fall grasses, black, and hatchet the undergrowth of preparedness, mask and tape the old jeep together until it rattles no more, until it drives with gravity on any path, with or without sincerity, until the destination is not a target. And perhaps then, and only then, the pollen, extension, absorption into being, a cool and ardor of will and poem.
Wonderful read there, Rex. I really like this one by Time Teller. I find it very intriguing how it too conveys movement, but it's almost more of a violent and chaotic movement. It almost reminds me of a serial killer. Or even on a more milder level of somebody, like, because it keeps saying that whack and hatchet over and over again, like somebody trying to get through a trail where there's a lot of vines and a lot of branches and thorns, and they keep having to whack things out of the way. But there's like I said, there's a certain violence to this that's very repetitive, to where it makes you feel like it's somebody who's emotionally having a breakdown, and you know, and I feel like that breakdown is coming to a close near the ending lines, where it's until the destination is not a target. Perhaps then, and only then, the pollen, its sudden absorption into being, may cool an ardor of will. Like the almost, it's interesting because pollen, we think of something, you know, that creates allergies, and here it's becoming almost like a common effect, as if being completely, having absorbed nature into yourself. The violent will of man is becomes calmed. Absolutely just an excellent write, and very well done. And Dexter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that this was a stunning write, and like you said, the movement of it all. I feel like it went from like almost early settlers or something, or maybe early like a tribe, you know, transporting across the continent, and you know, you're going through thick brush and you're going into the unknown. And you have your hatchet, and you're hacking through all of these vines and everything. And not only is that the movement that's happening, but the movement also goes throughout history. And now it goes into this old jeep that is rattling down the road in this rugged terrain that you're hoping, you know, that there's not really a road, but you're going over bumps, and this whole thing is rattling, and things are being tossed about. So it moves, the movement is in the same direction, but the movement is also transforms time or also in the movement. And so I thought that this was a very, very powerful rite in that sense.
Oh, absolutely. Great comment. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
It bites at being fully prepared, yet there are still things that come into the moment which you cannot prepare for them, pollen being one, the mirage of that sort where it's the haunting shape steadfast behind the waves of tall grasses. There is that, instead of plodding through with such a swelter of thought to moving fast and furious, maybe one should take the time to actually slow down in the moment, therefore bypassing some of the drawbacks that come from moving too quickly. Therefore, the indication is you might want to try and enjoy the journey because it might be fruitful at the end, but it will be troublesome in between.
Oh, I like that. You brought up a couple of really good points with the idea that the best laid plans of mice and men often go awry. And the whole idea of, you know, slowing, like, you know, think before you act, slow down, and enjoy the journey. I like that. That was a nice positive message to get from that. Very cool. Great comments. All right. And up next, we have Tangle by Daylight Stevens. And Dexter, will you give that a read for us, please?
Not a problem. This is Tangle by Daylight Stevens. Revelations in red. Caught in hesitation. Black and blue elbows. Swing the fulcrum. Flying forth the paint. Logic's flipped weight. No boxes. Wrecked. Tangles ride the loops. Multi-layered landscapes and flooded settlements, open channels, random access and process. A face appears, enmeshed in mirrors, directed by music, peering through jungle rope vines. The work is wild, free as few earthly things, rhythmic as a calendar, in the Bandanian of Astor Pozzola, end poem.
Great read, Dexter, and thank you for the right Daylight Stevens. I really appreciate his poetry. And Rex, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Well, let's see. Lost it. Okay.
You lost your thought?
That last thought, there is Bandoneon or Vasta Piazzolla. The Bandoneon is a concertina, I guess. Vasta Piazzolla is probably very well versed and good in the sort of the concertina. But I thought this was different, tango, offering up a kind of dance. And that's true if you think about it in the way that it's run, the dance of dropping that which comes to mind across the canvas itself. I like the opening, revelations, red court and hesitation. Black and blue elbows, swing the fulcrum, flying forth to paint, logic, slip wave. Now, there's a nice way of offering up the advent of what he was doing, as opposed to that which is normal, logic split weight. Yeah? Go with something different. The black and blue elbows kind of hit that note of thinking, and then just as you're thinking with your elbows sitting on the on whatever hard surface, you just start dropping in little tidbits of notation on the canvas itself. No boxes, rectangles, right loops. There's a flood of openness in this, that which I like that last line, that second one too, random access and process. It doesn't denote that which comes by a normal process, like you want to draw your charcoal in your essence first, and then you start filling out from there. This is done totally different. It's like that that where he's got here, peering through jungle ropes and vines. The work is wild. There is that kind of freedom in that movement and that dance, so to speak. So I guess the thought with the last two, rhythmic as a counter and the bandoneon of Astor Piazzolla, offers up that thought that is a free form by using the concertina, coming up something a little different, and he's offering up that same note with the language to describe the process that works within Pollock's mind.
Yeah, I like that. You're right. I think the tango was a perfect title for this, and to use the idea of the movement of dance. And he did take a bit of a different approach, which I did appreciate. And I like how this not only uses the idea of dance, but it also uses the idea of science and logic, as it says, logic's flipped weight, no boxes, rectangles, ride the loops, multi-layered landscapes, open channels. You know, I really feel like there's like a purposeful, almost purposeful sense of movement in this. And I like that I had to Google that guy's name to find out that he was a famous composer of tangos. So, you know, I think it's really cool that he used that idea, the idea of that guy, music that he composed as to represent the musicality within the artwork. And Dexter, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I enjoy the fact that I enjoy the tone and kind of the angle taken as far as talking about it feeling like a tango and talking about the way that it's painted, but it's also stated in a very clear context that this is also from the idea, this is from the angle of the viewer. A face appears, peering through jungle ropes and vines. When you're looking at paintings like that, where there's paint all over the place, you can see little things, and then you can point them out and go, "Oh, look at that! Looks like a rabbit, or doesn't that look like a face, or doesn't that look like this?" And you can find all of these little things within the painting that weren't painted there by the painter. And so the whole tango and the whole thing is marvelous, because it's walking through the thought process of the viewer on how that this was created and what he also sees. So I thought that this was a very good write on capturing the prompt.
Oh, absolutely. And that is intriguing and interesting how that happens with that kind of artwork, where you can pick out those little things that weren't purposely put there. Great comments. All right. Up next, we have Speckled Genius by Need to Create. And it goes like this. Breathe in the sharp smell of turpentine, greasy rags full of linseed oil, paper bag covering, alcohol bottle, brushes stained, pouring paint from jugs of color, vast canvas covering the floor. Speckled, mad genius, eyes of his lover watching from the corner, her heat inspiring his flow, tortured soul, end poem. Well, that was a nicely written brevity. And Dexter, your thoughts?
Yeah, this really captured just the I guess in a beautiful way the ugliness of the artist, you know, what he was doing, you know, from a sense of the last one was about viewing his art. This one is about viewing him as a person while he's in there creating and what he was doing, and a very directed right. And so it's the contrast of a different angle on way to take it. And, you know, as far as a brevity, I thought that she captured what she was going for, or what this poet, I guess I can't say she, or Alicia. So, yeah, I can't think that she captured what she was going for very well in a few short lines.
Absolutely, yeah, and I have to agree. I did like the way she captured the life of him, looking at him as you said, as a person. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's a look inside a moment, and complete with all the clutter and burying devices that can be seen. And that last two lines, her heat inspiring him, that gives off a thought as to what might be transpiring to spur his imagination. Maybe there's a little bit of a twisted sensuality that works off to the side, which he's trying to draw out, and that which he's offering. Or at least there's the implication there.
Yeah, I could see that. Or even just knowing that your lover's just waiting for you, or, you know, it does beautifully capture that moment, even though it mentions a lot of ugliness, like the struggle with the addiction, there's almost this sad and angry tone to it. And I like how she captures that in a few short lines. And then the ending line where it's like through all this struggles with emotions, there's that person that's in the corner, you know, rooting for you. Now, I can't say I don't remember reading a whole lot about his significant other, wife or girlfriend. If I remember right, they were in a long-term relationship, but there was, because of his the personal struggles, there was a lot of, you know, issues, which is to be expected. But, yeah, I thought this was a wonderful look at this moment in his life. So, excellent write and very well done. And up next, we have we have the same poem. That's not going to do us any good. Let me try this again. All right. Thank you. All right. Up next, we have Quartet Birth by Perfect Sunset. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Quartet Verse by Perfect Sunset. Drip, drip, drip goes the intravenous like a pine needle through my powder blue vein. Dressed in warm infirmary cotton, eggshell bed linens tucked beneath my jiggly white tiger striped hips. Midwife's breath hanging over my nape, cloud of lavender mint. Blood coagulates like ink blocks over the canvas of my pelvic bone, amniotic sac bursting as she slides through birth canal, daisy afloat a river flowing down waterfall's luscious turquoise hair. She slips into Nurse Crystal's hands like a loaf of sweet bread, an 8-pound currant bun. Her nascent flesh is ivory, diaphanous, swathed in guts and grapefruit and pomegranate, splattered as freshly born pink agate geode from the vaginal crevice of volcanic ash bed, muck in oyster coral, scarlet, and saffron. She paved the pumpkin, gutted violet corridor to the fourth gemstone, tearing through floral oleander placenta perfume layers of my cervix, 9-pound cluster of vanilla chunk, ice blue-eyed sandy beach haired boy remained Isaiah Frank, as eight gaping eyes honed in on him, intense at the solar flare. There stood, draped over me like a curious copper and green-eyed palm trees, James, Aliyah, Darius, and Arabeth, Lila, Diane, breathing over my bare, naked, coral-spattered bosom and clavicle and phantom womb, as babe sunflower lay sucking my skin like octopus tentacle. Snap, snap, snap goes the camera as it paints blots and pixels into canvas painting, quartet birth. As sunlight pours through the glass window pane and cherry blossoms hang, my swollen scarlet nipples spilling breast milk, white rain into his baby pear-shaped mouth, guava, pink lips, and pump.
Green,
yeah, have
green
fun
hair.
With that one.
Yeah, it didn't really start out with a first-person narrative. So I have to admit I didn't really get time to read it fully. I realize I probably should have read that, but because it didn't start with a first-person narrative, I thought it could be read either by a man or a woman. But I appreciate you going forth with that. It was an excellent read. And, I like that she wrote to two different paintings. And one of them was one of his it's still considered abstract or surreal, but it's not the throwing, the splattering, the creating through movement. Rather, it's a picture of a woman who appears to be giving birth and surrounded by other people. First of all, I have to say that picture drew my attention because of the raw, almost ugliness to it. I'm really a big fan of artwork that fucks with people's sensibilities. Like if somebody looks at a picture and says, that's not how birth is supposed to look, that's not how a woman is supposed to look, that, there should be more colors, there should be, a less wider shape, or whatever it is. And, I'm just a... The fact that he created this kind of like intense moment, but enough about the picture, which I'm glad she chose, but her use of imagery is both simultaneously beautiful and ugly, which is exactly what the birthing process is. It is ugly, it is messy, it is painful, and her description of it, and her description of the child as they're birthed into the world. And to use almost like it was intriguing how each child was almost described as if it was an object. I thought that was interesting. And I like that she brought up the stretch marks and, the pomegranate splattered as freshly born pink agate from the brown crevice of all and has bed mucked in oyster coral, scarlet, and saffron. That is just an interesting combination of imagery that really is one of those rites that grabs your attention and keeps it all the way through. And Dexter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that she almost, added, took the coloring of the top one and colored the black and white photo of the woman. I thought that she almost took it upon herself to lay the color in that. And this is just a very stunning rite about the childbirth process and the almost. From what I understand, as far as being under, sedated and kind of out of it, it's almost from that perspective of it being almost like a trippy scene where your senses are heightened, and maybe their senses are heightened even if you weren't on any drugs during that process because of just the whole wildness, I guess, or just the unreal, process of what's happening. But I think that she captured all of it very well, and I thought that she did a great clash of the pictures.
Oh, I like that. And I like that you mentioned that it does seem like, now that you said that, that she did color in the picture of the artwork of the woman with the colors that the other one. Oh, great comment. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Well, the quartet birth is the four watching, but this is actually a paired birth, because she hits on that one where, here it is, a river flowing down, waterfall's luscious turquoise hair. She slips into Nurse Crystal's hands like a loaf of sweetbread, an 8-pound currant bun. There's a nice, plus the thought of that little tidbit of wisdom. Oh, you've got a bun in the oven, have you? Yeah, no, I got two. Goes from 1 8-pound into the next one, which is a 9-pound boy. But I like, well, that's down two stanzas. But the next stanza offers up at the end there. Let's see, freshly born pink agate geode from the vaginal crevice of volcanic ash bed, mucked in oyster, coral, scarlet, and saffron. Now, the thought of born a volcanic ash bed, that there's the ease in the making. Then mucked, there's that sort of dirtying, but mucked is such a nice word. And using a variety of color to stain that muck, oyster, coral, scarlet, and saffron, does offer up quite the congealed sort of, yeah, there's a whole lot of shit going on down there right now. But the next one was done even better. She paved the pumpkin, all right? She paved the way out, a gutted violet corridor to the fourth gemstone, carrying through floral oleander placenta perfume layers of my cervix. 9-pound cluster of vanilla chunk, iced blue-eyed, sandy beach-haired boy we named Isaiah Frank, as 8 gaping eyes honed in on him as a solar flare. So not only she got the idea of a quartet in tow to watch the birth, now there's not just a singularity, it's 17 pounds of duality exposed, which is, yeah, that's quite the muscle treat there, 17 pounds. Yeah, how many watermelons can we fit in there today?
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think you when you brought up a lot of the strong points in the imagery there and the how it is very visceral, and My sister-in-law, her second kid, was 11 pounds, 2 ounces, and she delivered him naturally. And when she was in labor, she was screaming so much that one of the nurses told her she needed to quiet down because she was scaring the other patients. And then when my nephew was born at 11 pounds, that same nurse apologized to her, which I don't think the nurse should have said that to her in the first place, but...
That's not a baby, that's a 2-year-old.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah, definitely.
She should have laid off all that protein. Everything on hand.
Oh yeah, they do. They eat and grow quickly. That's for sure. And then before you know it, you're wanting to kick them out of the house. All right, great comments. And up next we have Convergence by Eden Gray and Dexter. Go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Okay, this is Convergence. This is something I care about. This is something I know. Break on through. Break on through. I know this is true. I don't care if you think I'm painting this or if I'm fucking with you. Who could even know if that's true, if that was true? When things come together, the lines fall down in different places. Sharp lines, heavy. One or more, these colors subtle, refined, layers layered, laid down with feeling, lie in front of you, and lie on your front, hang from the ceiling. His little hut is a studio with paint on the floor. Then open your doors of perception. Every splattered line, each controlled emission. The painter inspired finds a philosophical transition. The picture revolves around the eyes, the brain, describes the vividness, the purity of pain. I have to break through. Of course, there's form in what I do. People criticize, that's their pleasure, measure for measure. Shakespeare's shoes and all, paint crashing, but there is finesse, like watching a woman undress, break on through to the other side. Morrison and Pollock did not just throw paint or words around. They poured molten gold on the ground. Sometimes from a bottle, their solution. We meet people who turns us around. Break on through, brothers. Break on through to the other side. Pollock found his Krasner. Paint is like pain, but pain is stronger. Jackson, his arms could not reach further. Pouring and bringing lines together. Converging lines, converging matter. Break on through, JP. A guide to a few. The moment passed. The bottle won. I wish I could have seen you having fun. Sad boy, your lines were a treasure. You painted an island in your arms. Tried to bring those lines together, soft and heavy. Break on through, Jackson Pollock to the other side. End poem.
Great read there, Dexter. I have to say, I'm really impressed with this write. To be honest, a lot of times when people put the title of the show, Break On Through, in their write, I cringe because too often it's somebody who just read half of the title of the contest and wrote on that. But I think Eden Gray did a wonderful job of recognizing that the title came from a Doors song. And made this a beautiful tribute to both the struggles and the genius of both Morrison and Pollock. But I don't want to give a further comment because I'd like to hear Rex's thoughts.
Well, it goes deeper than that because he also mentions Blake and Huxley and the influence of Krasner, his wife. She brought a kind of a structure and formalized training to his unstructured and wild thought, which added probably those straightened black lines here and there or red lines to emphasize a particular motif in the singularity of everything he spatted across his void. Because he does hit on a little bit from the song itself, Break On Through, obviously, and then Treasure. And then there's Pleasure, which is also from the song. Then he offers up,
The Purity of Pain.
An Island in Your Arms, which is also from the song. And then Jackson Pollock to the Other Side, which is a nice finish out, breaking through. But there was, he hits on the solution from a bottle, their solution. That was both to Morrison and Pollock. But he throws in Shakespeare in here, too. This is carefully lined with a number of ideas, a philosophical angle coming from Blake's initiality on the quote. And then, there was another one. Open the doors of your perception. That is out of Huxley's book itself. So he's done quite a bit of thought to paint the imagery that he's got voiced in here.
Absolutely, and you're right. I mean, like you said, the word plethora is perfect to describe this. And it's perfectly, as you said, it's kind of carefully detailed and layered. Just excellent comment there, Rex. And Dexter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I was wondering almost as if the break on through was almost coaxing himself in a way. You know, when he wrote, obviously he connected it to Jim Morrison in the show. But if you look at the first couple of stanzas, you know, it's very simple. You know, even I'm fucking with you, you know, a little bit what you would, you know, maybe call crude. And all of a sudden it just starts to really pick up on his description of the painting and his connection that he connects with Jim Morrison and with Jackson Pollock. Layered, lay down the feeling, lie on your front, hanging from the ceiling. It's almost, then it goes into this philosophical, like it says, the philosophical transition describes the vividness, the purity of pain. The purity of pain. That's an unbelievable line. But it's almost as if he breaks on through within his writing and goes on from just starting a piece, you know, starting off as just writing a piece to when all of a sudden you really get into it. And I feel like that captures the layers on which I think that maybe that Pollock would paint with. You know, it starts off just kind of as you're scattering paint across on there. But all of a sudden, at what layer do you go, oh, I think I got something. And he really kind of starts going at it. I thought that this captured all of that just remarkably. And I thought that this was a very well-written piece, especially to rhyme it the way that he did. So very well done.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Yeah, it did have really nice rhyme and flow that didn't take over the right. And it almost was like a train picking up speed, going faster and faster, but not in a chaotic way. And I did like that he opened this up with, this is something I care about. This is something I know. And I think it was very important not to have those two lines switch, because it's like that whole idea of looking at a prompt, looking at, you know, a thought and saying, you know what, this is important to me. I can do something with this. And it does seem not only to be a tribute to these various artists throughout history, but also, as you said, this kind of a idea of his own break on through in the process of writing the poem. And I really like where he describes every splattered line, each controlled emission. The painter inspired finds his philosophical transition. I like the phrase philosophical transition. So it was definitely a strong write and very well done. And up next we have The Woman by Kay Heartless, and I'll go ahead and give this one a read. And it goes like this. Drop earrings, droopy breasts, everyone invests in the woman. Heels hidden, center folds, everyone's frightened of the woman. Drill bit arms, collarbone bowl, everyone farms and hoes the woman. Mouth that's missing milk carton calves, everyone's dismissing the woman. Slit of fine green slate, thighs that chafe, everyone gestates in the woman. Modeling clay, a man's property, everyone tries to splay the woman. End poem. Well, that was a powerful brevity with some nicely written couplets. And Dexter, your thoughts?
I thought that this was for his kind of as dark, I guess, as the painting is, and kind of maybe at, you know, at times displaying the ugly truth of it. I thought that it was an incredible poem capturing this, or just displaying the strength of the woman, invests in the woman, frightened of the woman. you know, it she is the center of it all. You know, whether you want to dismiss her or whether you want to do this, you're still, it's still a reaction to her. It's all around her. And I thought that it's, no matter if you want to look at it negatively or positively, it's still about her. And I think that that's a very empowering and written from a position of strength of the woman. So I thought that this was a very interesting take.
Absolutely. Absolutely well said there. It does have a certain empowering tone to it. And Rex, your thoughts?
I like what Dex says, but there is it does hint on feminism. Well, it does it in the face. But it also works on another angle. One could look at this as the earth, Gaia, in itself. The drop earrings, droopy breast, everyone invests in the woman. There's a notation of the breast, age, the drop earrings, beauty, the diamonds, the pearls, riches, everyone invests in the woman. Then there's that notation for the youthful end. Feels heightened, centerfolds, everyone's frightened of the woman. And you can think of that along with earthquakes, tsunamis, hurricanes, and all that. Everyone farms and hoes a woman. Is that necessary to in taking out that which flows normally as well as that which is expensive or wanting, missing cart and cash, everyone's dismissing the woman. There's a notation of the things that disappear in the world and being dismissive in how it's being treated. Everyone does gestate the woman on earth. But that's a singularity that cannot be denied. And the slave, the woman on the back end, is the, the back, you open up that to which is revealed to the point where maybe you destroy it too.
I like that. I like that you saw that in a different way, and it really makes sense. It can so easily represent a actual physical woman and how women are treated, but it also really makes sense with some of her use of imagery that this could be the mistreatment and the use of the earth or of Mother Earth and Gaia. I just wonderful observations there, Rex. And I see Jeremy says, Kay's use of repetition is a well-honed poetic device inspired. And I have to agree, not always a fan of repetitiveness, but there, if you can hone that skill and use it to strengthen the poem, it definitely works in your favor. I thought this had just wonderful, powerful imagery. I like that it can be read in different ways. The milk carton calves, that reminds me of that meme that says, I'm so happy to have thick thighs. I almost dropped my phone in the toilet and thunder and lightning caught it. Cheers to thick thighs. But excellent, strong brevity and very well done, Kay. Thank you for sharing that with us. And up next, we have, let's see here. Oh, boy, I'm not on top of my game tonight, am I?
Well, you almost just dropped your phone.
Exactly. I can't grab links and save my phone at the same time.
Yeah.
All right. So, who just read The Woman by Kay Harless? That was me, yes. And so now it's Rex's turn. And all right. Up next is Pressure on the Edge by Poetic Creations. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Pressure on the Edge by Poetic Creations. lateral line sensations, diamond strung chords, blood, guts, and gore shouldn't be ignored. So go ahead now and thrust some more. Hobble that cobbler, mince that meat, try to keep up with this. Too early to eat, tease my wound and stain our sheets. Bronze is my body, so your secret I can keep. Never is a word said, nor a thief. The scars run deep, but this nightmare won't stop. You keep me in this heat. And come.
Great read there, Rex, and I'm glad TC wrote for the contest. Always good to see him. Much appreciated. And Dexter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that this was a deep write, you know, and just kind of capturing that title, The Pressure on the Edge. But he did it in a very creative way that had a great rhyme and flow to it and a rhyme scheme to it, so I thought it was very well done.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely well said there. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, goes back to the title, Pressure on the Edge. Maybe that part of that is infused organically from self. Bronze is my body, so still your secrets I can keep. Never is a word said nor repeat. The stars run deep, but this nightmare won't stop. You keep me in the sea. There's an offering that he does a lot of this to himself in that. But I did like the thought, hobble that cobbler, mince that meat. Hobble the cobbler, the thought to hobbling used to be something you used to do in Africa during the diamond mines. You got caught stealing diamonds. They put your legs between a 4x4 at the ankles and then hit both ends of the feet with a 10-pound stretch until your ankles broke. And it was called hobbling. And, of course, cobblers are those people that make shoes. And then mince the meat. There's a thought to getting that brain into a gear to the point where you let the grinder take over in the moment. Mince the thoughts and spread that which comes out. Because you hit some of that thought to tease my wounds and stain out sheep. There's a little bit of sensuality in that, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great observation. And you're right, I like that you brought up the hobblers. At that point, I thought that was some interesting details. And yeah, there's kind of a bit of a sensuality within the wording of the rite. I like how this, it has a dark feel to it also. The idea, there's almost, I don't know, the sense of self-punishment, this idea of, to me anyways, of, you know, being so hard on yourself, being, you know, having that almost, the idea of falling apart and physically needing something to hold on to, even if it's that that kind of, you know, that pain that you need to have. Hobble the cobbler, mince that meat, try to keep up with this beat because it's too early to eat, keep my wounds and stain our sheets. Just wonderful visceral imagery and rhyme and flow and very well done. All right. And I might end up sending you guys to get rights. Or if you have something you'd like to throw on the board that you feel, you know, fits with the whole, like, you know, abstract or, you know, whatever you think fits, go ahead and feel free to do that. We don't have a whole lot left. All right. Up next is A Naked Man with a Knife by Guilty. And Dexter, will you give that a read for us, please?
Certainly. This is A Naked Man with a Knife. Defile order. Scream aloud. Hear me. My God is a righteous one. Bushy tail. Slacked abs. Thick legs. Belie the famine. Forsake the bread. horde of the metropolis scurry, flee the sharpened blade, swinging little member, sliced empty air. 417 at Penn Station. Suspect reeks of gin. Nah, just a Pollock painting. Flesh and steel with murderous strokes. Close your eyes, click your heels, drink away your sobriety. The true crime is the empty bottle spinning away from your dirty hands. Another masterpiece vomited on the white canvas of linen. The blood cakes your dry throat, soiled underwear, disrobe. Wash yourself in the steady cold rain. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Dexter. I have to say, it's good to see Guilty. He's got a unique voice that's all his own, and I always appreciate his writing and his take on prompts. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, I like the format because it looks like it's just right across the page in a nice thick abstract pen. So I like that to begin with, and there is definitely a draw from that picture itself right into "Defile or to Scream Loud." Hear me, my God, is a righteous one. There's that figure that noticed, especially with the blade, both in the hand and the one that lies between their legs. So there might be another realm that could be explored with that larger blade that sits between their legs at the bottom. And there's this sort of, I like the 417 at Penn Station, suspect reeks of gin, nah, just the Pollock painting. And that kind of hits on the notion of where some places you can find these pictures that adorn walls, like Denver Airport's got a huge mass of wall art depicting many things that kind of shocked the mind as well as, damn, where'd that one come from? So it kind of walks along that line. What else we got? I like the thought of flesh and steel with murderous strokes. Close your eyes, click your heels, drink away your sobriety. The true crime is the empty bottle spinning away from your dirty hand. There's a nice note to both the life and the death, Pollock himself, and literally accusing him of, hey, you know what? You kind of sold out in a bottle, old boy. You could have done a lot more with what you had, because he hits on that thought. Another masterpiece vomited on the white canvas of linen. The blood cakes your dry throat, soiled underwear, disrobe. But that paints quite the ugly picture of how you can descend so deeply into that which you're doing that you notice not that you have done mucked up your drawers. In the meantime, while you have gone this steady diet of booze and paint until your creation is finished.
I like that. I like that. That was some wonderful observations about, you know, almost like a calling out, as you said, you know, you could have done a lot more, old boy, if you hadn't been consumed by that which was your undoing, you know. And I really like that it had a nice twist, a creative twist in the idea of starting this out as almost like one of those people have gone insane and, you know, and just shouting out at the bus station or on the subway. And the way that he just, you know, put up that in capital, hear me, my God is a righteous one. You know, you really feel like he uses the chosen, whatever you call that type of writing to almost offer up a chaotic feel. And I like how this is almost, it is, as you said, a kind of a calling out of Pollock himself, but a calling out of anybody who reaches that low point, you know, and not, I don't know if calling out's the right word, but almost like this, it's almost maybe like a kind of a grieving process of realizing how many creative minds are out there that destroy themselves, that I should say that addiction destroys. I just, you know, I like the twist on this, and I thought it was strong and creative and very well done. And Dexter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I like how he kind of made it almost feel as if it was a 911 call. Suspect reeks of gin. No, it's just a Pollock painting. You know, that's just such an abstract way to look at one of his paintings. You know, it almost looks like a crime scene or a murder scene or something. Something illegal is happening within that painting. And I think he captures that. And I thought that was just a phenomenal way to view the piece and to put into writing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there. Yeah, I have to agree. It was a good way to view the painting and the write. All right. Next, we have Painting Pollock Style by Pink Fairy 5. And it goes like this. Getting out my paint. Primary and secondary, starting slowly, but working my way to a frenzied Pollock style, tossing out a few dots, no satisfaction, began penciling in some lines, thinking animals as I do this, an eagle, an elk, a monkey, something fun, humorous, clever, lots of yellows, reds, and blues, love the basics. A little black, some white, more than usual. I like bright. Bright is the ruler of the scepter, if you ask me. Tossing some random water bowls into the fray, pondering whether or not to leave it alone. This is how I know it is finished. I love it. End poem. I do enjoy Pink Fairy's writing. She's just got such a fun, creative style. And Rex, your thoughts?
This is where Krasner must have come into a bit of influence. There's more of a, it's abstract, yes, but it actually shows a little more delineation with the motif. You've got a 1-2, there's at least a couple of faces in here, what looks like a bra down the bottom, kind of a paw with claws. But there offers up a thought in here that he's pulling out from something different, because this is definitely very different from most of his other stuff as depiction goes. There's more voice in this. And so with primary and secondaries was nice. The introduction of colors, sort of offering up animal motifs as a voice in this work as well, even though, yeah, you could draw on that. I like that. Fun, humorous, clever. Blues, I mean, yellows, reds, blues, love the basics. But there's a thought to walking in a little bit different world and understanding, yeah, this might not be my typical, but it is something I did enjoy creating.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I like that you brought up the painting has more, like, form and shape, but it's still surreal. I did like, you know, I said it's, you know, it's how the whole process of enjoying the artwork. At least that's what I kind of get from it. And Dexter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit, and I enjoy Pink Fairy's writing also. You know, I thought that it really touched on something that's very hard, I think, for some paintings, and it's something I would imagine would be hard for painting in this fashion or this style. You know, and sometimes it's difficult for poets, but when are you done? When is this over with? Or when, it, you know, because it kind of looks like it's just chaos on there. You know, you start and then you carry on, and then, you know, but when is enough enough? And Pink Fairy writes, enough is enough when I love it, you know, and when I say that it's finished. when I enjoy it. I thought that was just a very refreshing view on the whole process.
Oh, absolutely. And that goes for, you know, any creative process, you know, poetry, art. It is refreshing, the whole idea of just stepping back and saying, you know what, I love this. It makes me happy. And, you know, do you remember that obnoxious song a few years back where it goes Oompa Gundam style or whatever it said? And I want to do that, like with
yeah.
Pollock style. Oompa Pollock style.
It goes on forever and ever and ever. No, I'm just kidding. No.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Thank goodness that kind of faded back into the background, except for it's kind of always like a little earworm occasionally.
Well, it just feeds out until the next horrible song enters in.
Right.
You know, that's the unfortunate. Old Town Road or something, you know.
Did either of you, Rex, did your grandkids or kids go through the gummy bear phase?
I didn't know there was a gummy bear phase.
There's this song called the Gummy Bear Song. It's basically said over and over again, gummy, 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 I'm a gummy bear. I can't remember it. But anyways, they had both the English version and the German version. And my kids would play it over and over again.
Thank God for that.
Oh, man, that sounds terrible.
Oh, it was. It was painful.
Well, it's just like Barney stealing a song from something I grew up with in my youth for that show.
Oh, yes. Barney was always one of my least favorites. Was that the one...
I love you, but the original is me.
This old man, he plays one. He plays knick-knack on my drum with a knick-knack paddywhack. Give the dog a bone. This old man came strolling home. And it continues through the numbers.
You're right. It is the same tune. I guess I never picked up on that.
Yeah.
Oh, too funny.
It's a conspiracy. You'll have to write the conspiracy out there somewhere or something like that. The indoctrine of kids or something. You know? No, I'm just kidding.
I think you're right. I never trusted Barney. I will say that. I never trusted that big purple dinosaur.
He's in on it.
He is. All right. Up next, we have... It was fun to hear Rex... Jeremy shouting for more singing. Well, maybe someday we'll get a show where we'll have a couple of parodies for Rex to sing. All right. And up next we have Behold the Vision by Randy G. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Behold the Vision by Randy G. Jackson Pollock, the reigning king of the abstract. His aggressive strokes are always on the attack. With a boundless energy, he never seems to lack, creating free-form art for which he has the knack. From indistinguishable mess of colored lines to softer pastel mixes, a little bit more refined, at times only he knows the reason to his rhyme, with a vision of madness, or perhaps the sublime. Pollock's work, extremely hard for some to view, strangely avant-garde, upsetting more than a few, sending them off reeling with their minds askew. It always takes time, adjusting to something new. They say you can appreciate art as you get older, enjoying uniqueness, your taste becoming bolder. Now finding warmth where you once saw colder, you perceive beauty is in the eye of the beholder. End poem.
Great read there, Rex, and thank you for sharing that fright with us, Randy. I have to say, this one really impressed me. Like, he is always so good about jumping in and being supportive of writing for contests and shows. And as always, just wonderful end rhyme that flows beautifully. And I really like how this is a tribute to Jackson Pollock, not only just a tribute to his artwork, but in the way how he became someone that people like hated or I felt strongly about criticizing his artwork. And I like how a lot of this, well, first of all, I have to agree, Rex, that's a really cool picture that he used with the whole hand adjusting the eye, the cornea, and almost like the idea of our own vision being adjusted. And I like, though, that this is, that comes across as a tribute on the struggles of when your artwork is not always appreciated. But it also kind of seems to me almost like a personal journey, like, you know, maybe Randy's own personal journey, or the you know, the character in the poem, their own personal journey of how their way they viewed art and the way they appreciated art changed as they got older. So excellent write. Very well done. And Dexter, your thoughts?
Well, I thought that you kind of nailed it, you know, on your comment, just the adjusting of the vision. I like also his aggressive strokes are always on the attack with boundless energy. He never seems to lack. You know, I think that in general, you would think about, you know, other people have called, compared his paintings to loops and to making loops. And I think that the circular, the curve, is not always considered an attacking thing as much as like lines and sharp corners and things like that you would think is attacking. But at the same time, though, his poetry is, or I mean, his paintings are so clustered in the colors that he used. I think that it is almost fitting that it is on the attack. It does kind of overstep bounds, and it does almost overstep kind of logic in the way that it is formed, and in the way that it's formed. And I think that at the end of the day, though, that's why it upset people, is because it didn't have really maybe a categorized, or there wasn't really, it didn't fall into your typical understanding of what people had in the past. And so I thought that this was a very very strong writing about, yeah, the view of the beholder.
I like that. I like that. Well said. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
I think the bite is kind of at the critiques for not understanding the visual aspect, as opposed to just picking on this little touch of this or this little touch of that. Because if you're going to sprinkle little bits about this, that, and the other thing, then you're not looking at the piece overall, which is you're supposed to take the perspective from outside yourself to the whole piece itself, and then walk inside to the little tidbits that you can notice that draw your eye and capture a busy imagination, where you can devise a thought, an idea out of that instance, and then expand it further across the canvas itself. And that's where that last stanza comes in. They say you appreciate art as you get older, enjoying uniqueness, your taste become bolder, now finding warmth where you once felt colder. You see beauty in the eye of the beholder.
Absolutely, absolutely. I like that. Yeah, definitely does, is an excellent write on the idea of it, that being in the eyes of the beholder. So great comments. And Dexter, I've gone ahead and put your poem up. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
All right, this is a little bit of an older write. A Chicken Scratch Life. I saw a white buffalo scribbled on a page. I was alone. They only saw lines that lead to an end. But in the scratches, it thrived. Shades of laughter mixed seamlessly with the outlines of tears. Circles of morning conversations and swirls of evening defeats I saw a white buffalo scribbled on a page. I was alone, so somebody threw it away. End poem.
Great read and excellent brevity there. I really like how you looped it around. You did that connecting up from the beginning to the end. And I think this really fits well with tonight's topic and the idea that when you see things differently than other people do, they don't always appreciate it. They don't always go, okay, that's a possibility. There's a very sad undertone to the idea of what you found purpose and worth in being thrown away. So excellent right there and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's a touch abstract, but it hits on that notion of a singularity, the white buffalo, that which is strange, that which walks outside the lines of normality and has its own thread to life itself. Yet, it is not seen that way. It's seen as the freak, the one that in doesn't belong. Even though you get in the thoughts, shades of laughter mixed in with the outlines of tears, so there are moments where there's joy as well as sadness. And let's see, the circle of morning conversation fits on hope, and the squirrels of evening defeat bites at that sort of being pushed outside the outside the door to where everyone else is. And that's where the thought comes in, so someone threw it away. It's how easy it is to toss an idea, a subject, or a person away just because it might sit alone or it might walk outside the norm.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Well said there, Rex. Dexter,
thank
did you want to say anything about your poem?
It was weird that all of a sudden I clicked on it and all of a sudden I kind of remembered where I was heading with this. And I just remember heading along the lines of how easily it is that, you know, almost like you see something on the news or something where this person died and this person was X'd out. And it's like, it's almost just like they were just scrap paper. And, you know, and here the circles of morning conversations and swirls of evening defeats and stuff. And you know, coming home after work and having these conversations and waking up and that person thrived in between there. There's a whole life in between the lines and in between those swirls. And that was kind of the gist of the write, and I thought it was kind of fitting of this evening. So
it was. Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for sharing with us. And, yeah, it did
Thank
fit
you.
Really well with the theme of the evening. All right. And up next we have The Woman by Nan529, and it goes like this. Morning cleaners, mop buckets in hand, sigh. Gallery of modern art masterpieces hung carefully, swishing of mops, clanging buckets as they survey quiet hush broken by the original tut, occasional tut. Sitting down, 10-minute break, outcome wrapped up cold toast. Better before them, the woman turning her head this way and that way, finally, one speaks. Well, I never, that's one ugly woman. Now then, Beryl, you know what they say, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Well, she looks like she ought to, is about to give birth. Silence, they stare. Who do you think the others are? I've no idea, maybe her sisters. She could have put some clothes on, though. Well, she's wearing shoes and earrings, they chuckle. She caught her death of cold, slowly they raise. The fellow who painted it, do you think he hates women? I don't know. It's what you call modern art. Who are we to judge? I just don't understand it. Into the new display walks the curator, beside him the artist. They stand looking up at the picture, turning to the cleaners. Ladies, I would like you to meet our talented artist. Smiling, they reply, oh, we was just saying, what a lovely piece of art and poem. Oh, I enjoyed that. I really like how she took it from the perspective of the common person, the everyday person, you know, and such an honest view, and the funny twist at the end with the politeness. A very cool light. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, the point in this was even from with those you don't fully understand, they gloss over and lie in their critique instead of offering, we see this, and this, but we don't quite understand what you might actually get. An opining thought from the artiste if you were actually honest enough to express that which you thought. Then you might find out what the beauty was behind the picture to begin with. So it just goes to hit on that notation of people being afraid to actually offer up an opinion because they don't understand, instead of offering up the opinion because they don't understand.
Absolutely. You know, and you're so right. So many people are worried to be honest. Me, I'm always making comments on things I don't understand. I just usually go by what the emotions that it evokes in me. You know, but too often, like, people want to be hoity-toity and look like they know everything. So I like that you brought up that aspect there, Rex. Well said. And Dexter, your thoughts?
I was watching a Bukowski interview, or, you know, a video that he was giving, and he was talking about, you know, here I am at my typewriter at 3 a.m. or 2, whatever it is, and I'm doing this, and I'm typing about myself. He goes, and I don't like to read my poems because there I am on the stage in front of everybody, and they're drinking beer, and it's 8:30 at night, and the connection is lost. They just don't kind of get it. You know, it was me. It was a feeling of me being there alone at 3 a.m. And unless you kind of can put yourself into those shoes, it's going to take on a whole different meaning to you. And I think that's what this kind of captures. And what's interesting is that the artist, though, Nan, is creative enough, though, to be able to put themselves in the artist's shoes, but also put themselves in the comic shoes. And this is all a conversation happening within the writer themselves. And, you know, what questions would they ask, or what would they think about this? So it's all a kind of almost insecurities within yourself being dialogued out, being written out. I thought it was a very strong write.
Oh, absolutely, and you're right. She was clever in the way she did that. And I'm glad you brought up the Bukowski videos. I've seen similar videos and interviews about how he struggled with reading his own poetry to crowds. And so I'm glad you brought up that connection. And let's see. What do we have next? We'll have to do another Bukowski show sometime soon. All right, up next is Splashing Colors by Betty Page. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Splashing Colors by Betty Page. Vivid cherry red, wild jet black, splashing colors, creamy French white spins. Looping all around, all sorts of patterns and shapes, invites emotions. Swirl to find colors full of creativity, imaginations. Fantasy sweet lines, painted precisely abstract views of perceptions. Everyone has one. Each is different. So new, same, yet different. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. I don't know. There's something about your voice that really worked well with that. Oftentimes I hesitate to have a man read Betty because she often uses sensuality in a feminine voice. But here she took a kind of a different approach. It's really all about, to me anyways, about appreciating the imagery and the uniqueness of the artwork. And I have to say, I think if anyone is meant to write Jackson Pollock paintings, it's definitely Betty with her use of color and imagery and her appreciation for things that are bold and different. So I think it's a wonderful brevity And I do, especially like the ending, each is different, so moved, same yet different. And then looping all around all sorts of patterns and shapes invites emotions. I think invites emotions is a very important line and an important thing about artwork in general, that it should invite emotions. And Dexter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. You know, the colors, like you said, represent emotion, or kind of said, you know, they kind of represent the emotion behind it, and all the sorts of patterns and shapes, you know, are those things, and they are us, and they are the ups and downs. You know, when you have anxiety or depression, and the way that they draw it out is that they draw it out to represent it to you in shapes and in colors. A lot of times, you know, it's like how when you walk in, how are you feeling? Are you feeling yellow today? Are you feeling red today? Or, you know what I mean? And it's all of these sorts of things. And I think that that's what captures this. I think Betty Page captures this about his rights in a way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Yeah. Your thoughts?
I think you guys did all that quite well. I got hit on that last stanza, plus one line above it. It hits on that notion of perceptions and opinions are like assholes. Everyone has one, and they never smell the same. I mean, they all smell the same. But she turns that on its head by offering up, everyone has one. Each is different, so new, same, yet different. So there's that twisting that notion of everybody's perception, ideas, thoughts. They all opinions are just stinky repetitions of the same ass, so to speak. And she's turned that into a different offering with the ending, offering up a different yes, same yes, yet different anyway, because it's new and still everyone has perception. It's just a matter of how you I think that perception.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, you're right. It is all about the perception, the view in which you take to see something. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead now and read the only poem I have that remotely relates to this topic. And because it is titled, She Was a Jackson Pollock Painting. And it's actually based on the quote, she never looked nice. She looked like art. And art wasn't supposed to look nice. It was supposed to make you feel something. And it goes like this. Oh, yeah, and Rex will read comments. She was a Jackson Pollock painting, a beautiful, enchanting mess. She drew people to herself, and no one could figure out why. They only knew they yearned for more. A purposeful accident, a bipolar dance, a splatter of color, dark and light intertwining, misunderstood, loved, and despised. She created a life in vivid brilliance, a world that others could not see, feel, or believe in until they gazed upon her, a vivid, masterful lobotomy, rejected and envied. End poem. Man, I got to take out some of those commas and periods. 4 years ago, I made way too much in commas.
I had the same thoughts.
But take out a few because the end ones, they kind of detract a little.
They do.
I was told the same thing. I was told after rhymes. So, like, basically, like, every four lines or something, leave a comma or leave a period. And so when I look back at older rites, too, I kind of see that also. It's almost like comma, period. There was almost like a way I was going about it, you know, and not realizing that it was just inferred or whatever, you know, with poetry when you make the spacing, you know.
Right. Exactly. I know the same thing. I actually, someone had to say to me that, you know, you have so many commas, you're putting me in a coma.
I loved this piece. I thought that a purposeful accident, a bipolar dance of splattered color, to describe somebody like that, you know, that somebody's going all over the place, a splatter comment, you know, I think that some people, that a lot of people can relate. Well, I guess a lot of people that have been through some, a lot of maybe trauma and things can relate to that. Because you, sometimes when you walk a certain path, trauma is just going to happen and hardship is going to happen. Some people walk such a careful path that the hardship that they endure is never venturing out. And it's a hardship that they endure later on. I feel like this is about somebody that wasn't scared to walk the razor's edge. She created a life in vibrant brilliance, a world that others could not. This is about the person that wasn't afraid to show their colors and to show their colors, even if they were sometimes maybe not the most beautiful ones, but they were the ones that painted her throughout her life. So I thought that this was just a very well done write, and obviously applied to tonight with the title. So great job.
Thank you.
Yeah, you got that in the enchanting thing. The vivid brilliance and the vivid masterful lobotomy kind of hits on those notes too of one of his more in-depth splattered pieces. Walks that way as a yeah, there's a madness in here. But you know what? And that last line, rejected and envied. You get rejected because people don't understand, and you're envied because they see something in it that they know is going to be great, and they still don't understand, and they reject it anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you, Rex. And thank you to both of you. Wonderful comments. All right, let's fit in one more last poem for the night. Up next, we have Ouija Board Talk with Pollock by Mark Loopy. And Dexter, will you give that a read for us, please?
Absolutely. This is Ouija Board Talk with Pollock. On the talking board, he sounded sad and crazy. It's the only way I could do it then, because that's how everything really was. I got tired of being a little lazy, doing what others called the truth. Screw, fuck, forget that now, I said. I know the real truth, and I'll just go ahead. Whatever pretended truth there is, I'll rip. The ecstatic wandering symmetry, I'll drip. The complexity of how I feel, the complexity of what I know is real. We are all forever falling, while the world's confusion is still calling. No permanency except the things you make. No love except the love you take. With the complexities that loop forever from the formless quantum soup. End poem.
Great read there, Dexter. I have to say, I really enjoy and appreciate Mark's writing. It's so unique. And again, another person who's quietly behind the scenes being supportive with rights for the shows. That ending line, so very clever. With the complexities that loop forever from the formless quantum soup. I like the idea of the Pollock's paintings being kind of that quantum connection of time travel. And I like how he sets the stage, even with the title, Ouija Board Talk with Pollock, and on the first line, on the talking board, he sounded sad and crazy. What I mean, really just raw honest view of how you could imagine Pollock would sound if he spoke through a Ouija board or a medium. You know, they're just creative right and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
I like that last line because he's writing it from the point of view of Pollock from the event horizon, where nobody gets to see what's inside his black hole until he quantifies it with that, which he puts on canvas. It's the view from the other side, the imagery, the color, the darkness is inside his black hole. That's where the screw fucks forget that now. I said, I know the real truth, and I'll just go ahead. Whatever pretended truth is there, I'll rip with the static one and symmetry, I'll drip. So there's an idea of showing somebody that which they cannot see because it has not been viewed before, and that only comes from the black hole interior of the mind being outwardly shown from that formless quantum super.
I like that. I like that, the idea of the mind being outwardly shown and how it's, you know, from Pollock's point of view. Very cool comment.
Very cool.
And Dexter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that this right had a lot to do with just the society's view on certain things. Almost the truth is being a little bit lazy. The truth is always kind of categorizing people. This person's crazy. This person is gay. This person is heterosexual. This person is this. This, you know, the categorizing of people and things like that is, you know, what you would call the truth, but that's being a little bit lazy. The real truth, you know, is that there's a whole lot of things that are everything in between. You know, the complexity of how I feel, the complexity of what is real, forever falling, you know, it's about being in that in-between space, that gray area almost, is where people are having to thrive. And what's interesting about the Pollock thing is because it's such a colorful piece, it's interesting or maybe it's exactly fitting. I don't know if it's a contrasting idea or if it's exactly fitting of having to thrive in between the emptiness or in between the nothing. I feel like that's what this write is about. So very well done, and I like I said, I love Mark's writing also.
Absolutely. Well said there. Great comments. All right, we'll have two carryovers, one from Borden's Axe, who was going to call in, and the other one from Julie Buck, who sometimes calls in, so I figured I would save theirs as carryovers. Thank you, Dexter, for calling in and joining me and Rex, because I know it's not always easy doing a doubleheader. And Rex, as always, thank you for being a wonderful co-host. Thank you to Jeremy for hanging out on the board and supporting us there. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, who's listening now or will be listening later. We appreciate you all. Of course, thank you to Fill My Eyes for everything she does in the background and in the foreground. We appreciate her. Now, I know it is a holiday weekend and people have family visiting and stuff, but please make sure to check out the contest that we have running for the shows this weekend. For Saturday's show, I'm running a contest with Gilda Radner Quotes. Rex is running a contest for Sunday's show with songs that have to do with celebrating Independence Day and America. And, you know, we just have, and also Rex is running a contest with H.G. Wells Quotes. For our After Midnight show. So lots of great stuff. Keep an eye out on the topic board. Keep an eye out on the contest because you're sure to find something to inspire. Great show, everyone, and have a good night.
Good night, gang.